A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to Red Men Radio, the Liverpool podcast brought to you by me, Paul Machin, and this man right here, Mr. Christopher Pajak.
Hello.
I apologise in advance if this is a sleepier than usual podcast.
It's not going to be sleepy. I've been conserving, I'm ready.
I am.
I'm going to use all my morning energy in this 1 hour.
Good, I'll see if I can feed off that. We went out on a staff training day yesterday. I'm going to say training day, we just went out on the piss. But via the Crystal Maze experience.
It was great.
They're not sponsoring this podcast. I wish they would, because I'd go there every week. It was fantastic. Quick straw poll in the room, though, Chris. How many crystals did we win in total?
Well, to be honest with you, there was 16 games, 8 of us playing those games, so it was 2 games each. We got an appalling 3 crystals of the possible 16.
So appalling that our guide, they said the machine only goes the lowest setting is 20 seconds, so they had to give us a crystal to get us to the minimum amount in the crystal dome. But we won 3 crystals legitimately through our own enterprise. Who won those crystals?
I won the first one, which was about 10, maybe, in.
Mm.
It was pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
I think you won the third one.
The second one.
Second one, and Bailey won the other one.
Mm. He did. Of the people in this room then, because they're in this room right now, is me, Paul Machin. I won a crystal.
I won a crystal. I'm Chris Pajak.
Yeah. And over there, behind the camera, is Mr. Tom Dutton, and he's smiling. You'll never see his face, but behind that smile is so much pain.
It's great.
Because Tom,
I can almost smell it.
Well, this is where our problem is, and this is why it might be the limitations of Team Red Men, is that you're meant to go together as a team, to fight for one sort of single cause, and Tom wanted to keep score. He actively said he'll be keeping an active score on who wins the most and who does the most challenges correctly. And just for the record, Tom got none. Tom got none of his correct.
And, you know, the best part about it was he went into, I think it was his second challenge at the time, and it was like a catapult one, wasn't it?
Mm.
And he's like, I've got one of these, I own this. Like, and then he proceeded to knock 7 balls 3 centimetres in front of him.
He could honestly have spat further than he used this catapult on these things. So Tom was horrendous. We were brilliant.
Pathetic. And there was a non-challenge where we had to go down the slide. We even managed to mess that up. Well, one of us managed to mess that up, and that was Ross.
Ross.
Never seen a person go down a slide wrong before. I spend my weekends in, you know, taking the kids to play centres and all that type of stuff. I watched 2-year-olds correctly go down slides. Ross, and it's nearly 30 years old, incorrect.
I don't know which body part he went down. It was like a shoulder blade he seemed to go down on. Like, terrific. But there is some footage of all this, not so much in the Crystal Maze. I managed to get a bit of footage from it, but nothing significant. But yeah, there might be a little vlog of that coming soon, so stay tuned for that. Kickoff question comes from Jamie Kubis. It was one of our wonderful subscribers to the RedmenTV.com. He says, after Di Maria shouting at the United fans to fuck off last night, who in sport would you like to shout fuck off to?
There is only one answer for this, and if you haven't picked exactly the same, on 3.
1, 2, 3.
Sir Alex Ferguson.
Screaming in his old wrinkled red-nosed face.
He ruined 20 years of my football fan life.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, agreed. If you've got a different answer to that, please do let us know in the comments. But if it's anything other than Ferguson, you are wrong. News. We've got some more of your questions coming later on in the show, and we do the Q&A on the website as well, which is taking a load of your questions and answering them. News. Dejan Lovren, Chris, is facing a race to be fit for Bayern. In fact, it's looking a bit touch and go, rather unlikely at the moment. I mean, look, we'll talk about the options to cover it, but that's just not good news.
No, I don't think it is. I think personally, and I know, listen, some people might disagree with me, but I think he's a better centre-back than Joel Matip. Oh. You know, I think Joel's done an admirable job over the last few weeks. I don't think he's made any howling errors or anything like that. I don't think he's played badly. I want to say that first and foremost. But I just think Lovren's a better defender than Joel Matip is. And, you know, there's sides of Matip's game that I prefer to Lovren's. You know, I think he's better at bringing the ball out, although we've seen in the last couple of weeks him noticeably lose the ball when he's coming out of defence once. I'm not too bothered about that because he tries it four times a game.
And more often than not, he's losing it on the edge of their 18-yard box.
I'm not too bothered, but you do tend to remember that because it looks so mad sometimes, doesn't it? When someone does something like that, you do remember that. And I think that doesn't hurt, doesn't help his cause quite often. But I just think Lovren's a big player for us. I think, you know, he's cut the errors out of his game most of the time. I think he went a year pretty much between that Tottenham game and his next big errorful game. And I actually thought, I know he had a bad game against United last time out, I actually thought he'd be a massive player for us against United. Mm-hmm. And to be a big player against United, I think he needs to have played against Bayern first.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, obviously. You know, the immediate reaction is, well, it's okay because Fabinho can play there, but I want Fabinho in midfield. You know, there's a concern. I said concern. None of us really wants to see Henderson, Wijnaldum, Milner as a midfield three. You know, it has its time and its place, and it's nowhere near as bad as some would make out. But you can't escape that some of our worst performances have come with that. You know, as that midfield. PSG away stands out. Fabinho's so good. I want him in the heart of the midfield. But the thing about this is, we're saying Fabinho Matip's got to stay fit. Yeah. You know, he's still got a couple of weeks. There's all kinds of illnesses, and you know, he could contract a bad case of the shit before then. I hope we're keeping him away from Gini Wijnaldum as far as possible, as humanly possible, because Matip's injury record's not great. You know, same with Dejan Lovren. This is I think it's a wider conversation, and it's certainly a conversation that Liverpool's recruitment team will be having. Is it's all well and good having four centre halves, but
three of them are injury prone.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's it. And obviously we've got Van Dijk missing for this game, so you're talking about, are you really talking about anybody other than one of the first 14, 15 names in that squad? I don't think you can look any further. Not against Bayern Munich.
You're not putting Kiana Hoover in against Robert Lewandowski. It's just not. Yeah, no. And so then you're looking at worlds where you might have to put. Well, the thing is, you might have to put Jordan Henderson in there, but once again, there's a guy that you want at the heart of your midfield that you're taking out of midfield. Now, okay, so we could probably get away with it. I think we're lucky, we're quite blessed with you know, just good all round footballers, good all round athletes. You know, he wouldn't be putting James Milner in a centre half, but Henderson could do a job. I suspect if you really needed him to. But once again, you're leaving, you could leave yourself with a mountain to climb.
Yeah.
I think
for me, right, I play Lovren at 80% in this game, and I think that's because Fabinho is so crucial to how the midfield plays.
Yeah,
it's not to say that an 80% Lovren's better than 100% Fabinho at centre half.
Yeah.
It's the Fabinho's better than the other options, and he's really starting to come into his own in that midfield, and I think he would be a really important player in the middle of the park.
There's one of them in this circumstance. Lovren's got to get through the match, but if you told me you can use Lovren for this but he might miss the next three, I would knowing that, you know, Van Dijk's coming back because it's only a suspension, I might take that. Take that gamble on that, but we'll obviously see when we get there a little bit closer to it. On positive news, and it's what's becoming the weekly bounce of podcast positivity, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's done a first proper session with the team over in Marbella. Did you see the little video on Twitter? So Peter McDowell's interviewing him, saying, "How are you doing?" He's saying, "I'm a bit stiff," laughing, "No, I'm fine," yada yada yada, and then he just goes, "What, you have to watch the footage back, because the shift I've put in there, you know, I'm still better than Andy Robertson. It's just like, yes. Oh, I love him. Love Oxlade-Chamberlain so very, very much.
Yeah, he's going to be massive in the running for the end of this season, isn't he? I think, you know, it's at a time of the season where it looks like Naby Keita's turned his form around as well. I'm sure we'll discuss him a little bit later. So to have somebody sort of breathing down his neck and, you know, you're looking at him and you're thinking, bloody hell. All right, he's done his first training session. He's actually close. I better get knuckled down and make sure that this spot's my own. But not only that, that comment, you know, talking about Andy Robertson the way that he did and stuff, that just tells you what type of a man he is around the squad. Yeah. And he just comes across as one of those guys who will lift everybody's spirits.
Well, remember the Coutinho post-match interview last season when he just basically, Coutinho was getting bullied into answering and he just stepped in and just basically palmed Jeff Shreves or whatever off, and yeah, he's got
that's captain,
he's got,
like that, innit?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a big character. He's a big personality. He's a big talent. And this is what I'm just crossing my fingers and toes because we don't know, and it's what I'm about to say. Sorry, I'll say it and then I'll have to. If I caveat, I'll caveat it. It would be lovely to enter the final stretch of a season and have more players available to us at the peak of their powers, as opposed to what normally happens is where it all falls to pieces and we claw ourselves. I use the reference, the end of the first race of in Disney, the first Disney castle, and Lightning McQueen has to get his tongue out to get to the line to reach that. That's how Liverpool normally end seasons. It would be great to power over the finish line this time, and if you can get Oxlade-Chamberlain available, if Naby Keita is starting to find form, Fabinho, all these lads, then that would be absolutely amazing. Couple of non-Liverpool bits of news before we get back to Liverpool news. Things I wanted to talk about. Aaron Ramsey will reportedly earn £400,000 a week. What is this world?
I don't know. I said it to Neil Jones on the Newsroom podcast this week. I was like, whoever his agent is, get him sorting Brexit out because we'll get a good deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's absolutely ridiculous that someone like Aaron Ramsey can get £400,000 a week. And there was rumours actually that Liverpool were interested in him a couple of months ago and we pulled out, as did, I think, Manchester United were interested in him as well because of these wage demands. I mean, that's scandalous. And it has, to be fair, since been reported, and Neil told me this, that those figures are off.
Yeah.
That it's closer to 250 a week. Right? So quite some way off.
Yeah.
Still.
Ludicrous.
Just crazy. And is he past his best age-wise? I think so. Okay. Did he ever fulfil his potential? Probably not.
Well, I mean, it depends what you mean. I think it's a tough one because I think if you look at the analytics, you look at his goals return from midfield, fantastic. He's a fantastic footballer and he has got an eye for goal. And so goal scoring centre mids are very much a rarity and they are a premium and they should cost
a premium. Felt there was another level for him to hit, because I've always liked him as a player. I think he's brilliant, and I, that goal return's incredible. But I always thought that he had the potential to be the best midfielder in the league.
Mm.
And now, whether it's injuries or whatever,
it's injuries certainly, but also being at Wenger's Arsenal in that time, you just have to see how much of a, again, we just talked about him, how much better Oxlade-Chamberlain looked like for being under a manager who knows how to get the best out of him. Makes a massive difference in his. But you're right, is that I think the people who are balking at that asking price, if he probably just kept himself on the pitch, or if maybe he'd been somewhere else, I don't think people would be questioning it so much, because there's a lad who scores double, you know, when he plays the games to do it, he scores double figures goals every season. He's got that in his locker, so he should be. There should be no question marks about this. Look, Paul Pogba I'm pulling this out of thin air, but I don't think Paul Pogba has ever really got a consistently a really high goal return season on season. I mean, he's a better all round footballer, like, but you know, that's what I'm kind of driving at, is that maybe Juve just go, well, yeah, great, and he scores all these goals, and they've just gone, they haven't just clicked over to the injuries tab on Footy Manager. Oh, well, out for 8 weeks with this, out for 12 weeks with this. How many games does this lad actually play? Only someone's just gone, his goal per 90 record is like, he scores like 4 goals in every 90 minutes he completes. Unfortunately, it takes him like 5 games to complete 90 minutes. But he's got 5 individual games and he scored a goal.
Juve are an interesting club right now, though, aren't they? Because they're very, it feels to me, they're win now. And, you know, you get cycles on football teams, and I'm not sure whether the manager will be there for much longer anyway. I think, you know, he's had a good run at the Champions League. He's got to the final a couple of times, and, you know, he's not quite got over the line with it. Obviously, the signing of Ronaldo meant that they mean business. I think the signing of Chan from us, and then you look at Ramsey. They're all of an age where you're starting to think you've got a small window to do something really special here.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel, and I don't know the depth of their squad, to be fair, it doesn't feel like the signings that I see them making is future planning.
They've always done this, haven't they? I think like they're picking up the likes of Sami Khedira when he wasn't like the best, and his legs have fell off big time as well. So they're just getting good quality lads in. They've got that appeal, and they've obviously got the money to spend. What's the point of them building for the next 5 years? They're on top. If you can afford to keep spinning, then yeah, God fair. I mean, like I said, I don't, no disrespect to Aaron Ramsey, really. I don't think anyone deserves the wages that are really being touted around for him. I don't think you're right that I don't think he's done enough in the last couple of seasons at least to earn that. If he was, as you say, look at like when Suarez moves to Barcelona, or when Ronaldo moves to Real Madrid, Bale moves to Real Madrid, there's lads who've just done two, three seasons as the best players in the league, and then gone to that. No,
and to be fair to him, you know, the last couple of months he's been the best player in that Arsenal side, maybe bar Aubameyang. But that Arsenal side aren't good.
No, they're not. United got beaten by Paris Saint-Germain last night, Chris. We watched it in a bar in Manchester off the back of it.
I couldn't recommend it highly enough, to be honest with you.
It was great.
You know, seeing and the pain up close, feeling
it. What was funny is there was literally one fella, he was in with his bed, and he was kind of sat behind us, and we were largely blocking his view of the screen, which was also funny. And we all, like nine of us, all went, with the first goal, and he goes, "Oh, fuck off, celebrating."
And then the second went in, yeah, and we celebrated that.
Absolutely
too. Brilliant. And quite rightly.
Sadio Mane buzzed off it as well on Instagram,
he
apparently.
Did.
Good
he
old
did.
Sadio.
You did.
You a fan of this?
No. Not with playing them in a week and a half time.
Absolutely not.
No, thank you.
On the subject of Sadio Mane, apparently he's encouraged Timo Werner to join Liverpool. Have you seen this?
Yeah.
The quote is, and I mean, I'm so sceptical of anything that apparently is Sadio Mane of late, but there you go. He seems to have gotten, since he didn't speak about Liverpool's title race, and I've never heard him speak about anything. He's done like 3 interviews since then. But anyway, he said, he spoke to Bild, and he said, "I'd advise him to join Liverpool. I like his style of play. Very forceful, good finish, always giving it 100%. If he wants to join us, we'd welcome him to our team." When it was clear that Naby would join us, I often watched Leipzig matches, but to be honest, it was dreadful for me at the start. Naby had quite a few red cards. I then asked Kevin Campbell, my friend from our time at RB Salzburg, why Naby always got sent off. He didn't know. Naby missed some important games that I could watch other players more closely, and Timo stood out. I love how that, he just used this as an opportunity to absolutely troll Naby Keita for having a bit of a shit season. Fantastic.
He's a good guy, he's our Sadio Mane. If those quotes are true, then brilliant, because that's what you want. You want your players encouraging other players to come in. And listen, if he didn't ask Kevin Campbell for his phone number as well, then, you know, he should have done. You know, and why not? This has happened for years and years. Tapping up is done by players, and that's what you want, isn't it? And I think, you know, the more you can get a player's attention and think, oh yeah, wow, they're talking about me now, and that's good. Maybe I want to be in that part of that squad and stuff. And maybe Sadio just wants loads more strikers around him as well. The more good players in the team, it seems to be better for him, doesn't it? He's doing well at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, Brit. I think we'd all be very happy with Timo Werner. So yeah, please go and make that happen, Sadio. Watch the Reds transfer roundup show on the RedMenTV.com for more Liverpool news, transfer stuff, and a lot of the stuff that happens off the pitch. Steve Hall's done a wonderful job on there. Get over it. It is free for the first month. You can try it out. Every single week that show is there, along with a clutch of other brilliant pieces of content, including Stats and Tactics by the man, the legend, Mr. Chris Pajak as well. Okay, Bournemouth, Chris. A final look back at this game. We said it on the final word show, but just a massive sense of I say relief, and I think it kind of was not relief for me, because I never felt like Liverpool, the wheels were going to fall off, and I never felt that drawing two games of football was really that bad a thing in the wider scheme of things. But the performances weren't great in those games, so I can understand how for some people, I said this at the time, could in their head extrapolate that out as Liverpool being on the way down, as opposed to being a team that's just maybe having a bit of a stopper stretch and before picking themselves up again. So to go out there to put in the performance that we did against Bournemouth in a game that 3-0 really flattered Bournemouth, I thought, it's exactly what we all needed.
It is, and it's obviously, you know, I think a lot of people will look at it through the optics of how we're doing in the Premier League and stuff like that. I tried to take a little bit of a different view since we've done the final word, and that is more like thinking about Bayern Munich game as well, because one of the things that we've done this season and not done very well is switch between formations. I think we've been fantastic in the 4-2-3-1 in the earlier parts of the season, but when we utilise those 4-3-3s in the Champions League and in the big games, we've not quite hit it.
Yeah.
We've not done it in the same way that we were doing it last season.
Or the switching more, whether it's for formation, and you're right, because it does largely line up, but switching from being a side that dominates the ball to being a counter-pressing side, we haven't looked like the team of last season.
Exactly.
When I think there's times when we've tried to be the
and
team
we have
of last season.
We have tried to be that, and this was the first game that you think, yes, yous all seem to be absolutely on it. Like, I wonder whether they have been working on it in training before this game. But you know, the level of importance of that result initially, massive, but for Bayern Munich, I expect us to play exactly the same way, and for Manchester United and for Bayern Munich again.
Yeah.
So to be able to get that, like, you go into that formation, you put your front three up in those positions, and they perform, what confidence you've got for the next three massive games. And then you got the derby a little bit further down the way and stuff like that, and that's brilliant. These lads will be feeding off that, and they'll be thinking about this while they're away, while they're in Marbella this week. They'll be talking about it, how good it was, and they'll be trying things in training, and it'll just, everything just sort of escalates a little bit, doesn't it? And you relish in the next time you get to go and do that in front of another 50,000 people.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the really encouraging things, and it kind of ties into what I was saying earlier, having that stronger performance from Naby Keita makes a big difference. Because look, again, if we wanted to look at it, we say, well, it's only Bournemouth, isn't it, yada yada yada, and then, oh, you can only play what's in front of you, yada yada. We should be feeling the spirit of positivity, and it bodes very, very well when a lad who's got obvious talent, he's clearly got so many things going for him, and it hasn't quite clicked for him this time. And I'm not saying he's going to go on and be an absolute world beater from now, but it's about getting tunes out of your players. It's about having players who can contribute and contribute positively to the side, and not in like a, oh, well, it'll be fine if we have to put Moreno in for a game or two, or it'll be fine if we have to put, like Matip, we're fine with Joel Matip in there. Naby Keita has been bought as a senior player. He's been bought to be one of the first names on the team sheet, and he hasn't been that yet. And he started to edge into that uncomfortable territory of people just might not like him. And his grace period was very quickly coming to an end. Now the Bournemouth performance, you know, as a significant hand, he's the guy before the guy, presumably for two of the goals. If he continues, even if he just plays at that level, we've got a fantastic asset. But realistically, the more he plays, he's actually going to get better.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's about feeling a part of the team, isn't it? And knowing that you've contributed to something, and to this game, he'll know that he's contributed to a Liverpool victory there, and he can look at that around that dressing room with his head held high.
Yeah.
He's got that, you know. He plays that ball to Firmino. Yeah. I know there's tons still to do, but it's an incredible ball, and you know, I think somebody mentioned it the other day about that goal gets replayed. He's a massive part in that, and now fans are seeing it. How many times have you watched it?
Yeah,
I've watched it like 25 times,
three times.
Yeah. Right, I've watched it 25 times or so, right, and every time he's there, and you just feel positive about his performance just because of that. There's a recency bias. You forget the other 90 minutes, it doesn't matter, but he was good anyway.
It's another thing that feeds into that notion, and it's never been more prevalent than it has been this season, but it's been building up towards this, and it's that the toxic football banter kind of stuff. And there's just something too, and some people are more resistant to this. It's not something that arses me in the slightest, but there are people who Liverpool spent £50 million on Naby Keita, And there's just something to having your £50 million player actually do a bit
yeah.
and actually show a bit, and it makes your life a lot easier because you don't feel like... Because we do naturally want to defend everything Liverpool does. You know, if you're a diehard fan, you're a fanatic, you're a lunatic about your football club. You see everything in the bright... You know, put your red-tinted glasses on, the red-tinted contacts, red-tinted irises. You know, they're welded onto your face and it helps. But when you start to go, ooh, I'm not sure about it, you start to hear the criticism, you don't want to be a fucking deluded dickhead who goes, no, he's great, when he's not been great. If you start to play like this, it's now easier. I think I might have mentioned this on the Final Word Show, which was great, by the way, highly recommended on the website. You're able to link this performance back into the good start he had to the start of the season, and the more he does that, we'll gloss over the middle section of the season where a combination of injury and change of formation and what have you meant he wasn't great. And that's what, again, positive, feeding all into this direction, Liverpool being a much better prospect.
One of the things for me with Naby is, and again, it's something that Neil mentioned to me yesterday, is that, you know, we forget sometimes that we don't forget, actually, we talk about it all the time, that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain took a long time to get into this mm-hmm. side before he was ready. What we do tend to forget is that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain had been playing Premier League football for about 8 years beforehand.
Yeah.
And even with all that 8 years of Premier League football, he still took time to adapt.
And Champions League football.
Whereas Naby Keita is coming from a different league to a different country with a different language that he doesn't speak and has taken time to adapt. Shock.
Yeah.
Shock horror.
Well, all spot on. Can I add to it, though? Oxlade-Chamberlain joined the Liverpool side that finished fourth the season before, just... I was having their first season back in the Champions League for, what, 3 or 4 years prior to that, and then it was an isolated thing. You know, getting into Liverpool's team was easier to do last year than it is to get in. Liverpool, this is sad they got to the Champions League final. Naby Keita is getting, you know, it's like, if, and we're not quite at Real Madrid's level. Maybe we are now, but, you know, we certainly weren't. You said you've been bought by the Champions League finalists, you know, but by the grace of God, we would have been Champions League winners. Try again, you've got to break into Real Madrid's midfield. That's a tough, it's a much harder thing to do than it is to break into the Europa League Liverpool's midfield, or it is to break into a Liverpool midfield at any point prior to that. So that's what you mean. It's, you know, maybe why it has taken a little bit longer. It's taken a bit slower to adapt, and you're right, all those other issues. And what's good is the issues at the language thing. It's harder to take umbrage with them when he's just performing on the pitch, whereas when he's not performing, it's easy to pull up all these little things and say, oh, well, he should be more fluent in the language, and he should be this, and he should be that. Oh, when he gets £50 million, he goes, how much money is he on? Whereas we just want to see lads caught on the pitch and be good at footy. And you know, once we get to the point where those lads are at that point, then it doesn't matter all the stuff that went before it. The important thing is they get there.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of Klopp, and that's why I think he's the perfect fit and the perfect manager. Once again, yet another example of it, is that if we do get the best of Naby Keita, or we start to see better from Naby Keita between now and the end of the season, then that's yet another tick in the Jurgen Klopp masterstroke box, because, great. You know, it's a cliche, but it's like having... people complain that we didn't buy anyone in January. Well, you know, Naby Keita was largely forgettable for the first half of the season. He didn't have a particularly tangible impact other than minutes on the pitch kind of thing. If he starts to come good from February onwards, well, then that's what we've done there. You know, it also shows there was no point in buying anyone in January, because probably wouldn't have seen them do anything until fucking August anyway.
Yeah, and then you got Alex coming back as well. Brilliant, absolutely yeah. Superb.
I just cross some fingers and toes, and obviously people can get injured along the way, and you know, just to clarify, the jinxes don't exist, so I'm going to say these things, but you know, we need the key guys in the squad to stay fit. The ones who've been fit so far, stay fit. We need them to stay fit, absolutely. But as I was saying earlier, we're in a world now where, you know, Adam Lallana's getting up to speed, and he's a fine bench player to have. Jane Jacquiri up and running, he's having a little dip, but he's due to have a little bit of a resurgence in his form again. Naby Keita's finding form. Oxlade-Chamberlain's about to, you know, it's just starting to come back to full training. Fabinho's found his feet. Jordan Henderson's having probably his best spell in the Liverpool side in terms of being more Jordan Henderson.
Like, might be the best midfielder in the league.
Gini Wijnaldum's absolutely class. You know, we're getting a tune like Joel Matip's not amazing, not a world class centre half, but he's putting in good shifts.
Trent we're Alexander about to get Arnold's our right back.
Yeah, exactly. All these things. We're entering a stretch of the season now where it's going to get hard. It's going to get grueling. We're a couple of players back to fitness away from being the strongest we've ever been at this stage of the season, which again is a very, very exciting thing indeed. Chris, you've mentioned a couple of times, so let's give it a proper plug. Chris sat down with Neil Jones from Goal.com for the Newsroom podcast this week. A fantastic effort once again. Here's a little clip.
Right, you mentioned his name briefly there, Naby Keita.
Yeah.
What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, probably his best for Liverpool. You know, you compare that with probably the West Ham game, first game, and then Burnley away, which was a bit more of a dog of a game anyway. So, you know, he impressed in that game, doing different things to what he did on Sunday, Saturday. But it's always nice, I think, when a player's performance gets decorated with something. And, you know, it's not just, yeah, he had a good game there. He had a good game and that pass he played for the third goal. You know, that I think that always helps the perception of a player. And
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Listen, you know, there's a lot of people who will get very angry if you criticise a player like Keita because obviously they've waited for years for midfielders to come in and you know, big name signings and things. But listen, it's fair. He's a £52 million player, Naby Keita, and until probably the last couple of weeks, he hasn't had a run of games, and B, he hasn't had a run of performances. But you know, you can't. There's a reason he's not been getting games. You know, if he was outstanding every single day in training and outstanding, you know, the obvious option, he'd have been playing all these games. He hasn't been because, for whatever reason, it hasn't happened for him when he has had chances. And other players have played well in his absence. Fabinho being one, Henderson being one, Gini Wijnaldum. So it surprised me a little bit how long it's taken for him to really settle into the team, because I think the idea was really that it would be Fabinho who'd take the time and Keita would be ready to hit the ground running. And Jürgen said that himself, really, during the summer.
Yes, Chris, Neil Jones, fantastic guest, as always.
Yeah, it was boss, mate, yeah. So it's the second time I've done the newsroom with Neil. It's always fascinating getting, like, a journalist point of view, because obviously Neil was at the Echo for a long time, and now he's actually took over Melissa Reddy's role at Goal when she moved on and stuff. And it's good. I like speaking to these people every single week, you know, from outside our circle, as it were, because I think it just opens your eyes to different viewpoints. It's always good talking to somebody else. Like, me and you have very similar views on football. We differ on occasion and stuff, but generally speaking, we see the game the same way. Yeah. And it's nice to see a journalist perspective on things as well.
It shows a difference, doesn't it? Because everyone can be a writer these days, because you can just start a web page up and do it. Look how we got where we are. You know what I mean? I was a production geek. And we like talking about footy with our mates, so we put ourselves in front of it, and now we've got a platform. there's a tangible difference between professional journalists and people who are not professional journalists. They're people to be aspired to, and as you say, it's incredibly informative, because when people like that speak, you know it's thought through, it's considered, it's educated, and it's often sourced, which is the thing that most people on the internet miss. Double sourced.
I always ask them about the transfers and stuff, and they're always like, where did it come from? Like, Calcio Mercato, Neil. And he's like, I said, will you be contacting your contact at the club about that one? He's like, not for Calcio Mercato, no.
That's sad. So just a quick run through, what were the topics that you discussed?
Oh, there was loads, mate. It's so difficult to remember when I've had about 20 pints between then and now.
Fantastic. Well, look,
them cocktails, man.
We'll put a link to that in the description. We'll put it in the post on the website as well, so you can get through it. Have a little click, and I'm sure the agenda for it will be in the post as well, so you can have a look at all that. But yeah, get on that. As I say, and as I will always say, we do phenomenal content over on the RedmenTV.com. We've got the YouTube stuff. If that's fine for you, that's fine for you. But if you need more and better, you know, higher production values, more in-depth, more chats, then you can get over there. As I say, it's completely free for the first month. Go and have a look around, try it on, walk around in it a bit and see how it fits. And if you enjoy it, then it's £5 a month thereafter, which is when you consider...
What are we selling on that website, Paul? Clothes?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
No, it's a look, it's a vibe, okay. It's a feel. It's an aroma.
It's not.
It's literally videos and podcasts. but you can carry them around on your phone, on your person. So try that out in your life, whether you're sitting on the couch or whether you're sat at your desktop or you're on a bus listening to us.
Trying to keep your traveller's marrow down. Traveller's marrow, it's a thing, Paul.
Is it an erection?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Cool. Brilliant. Right, we'll move on.
Don't you want to talk about Travellers Marrow?
www.theredmentv.com. Man City Spurs. Let's have a little talk about where we're at.
Tom knows.
I bet he does. Is that when the bus kind of like lingers at the lights?
It's that, and your mind's just, and then all of a sudden, dun dun.
Hello,
dun.
Hello, mate.
Hello. Shit, it's my stop. I'll just sit on here for another couple. You're fine.
Fantastic. Don't ring the bell for that one.
Also why I don't get the bus.
Brilliant. Not a particularly at school time. City and Spurs, Chris. City and Spurs. Spurs keep winning. I thought Spurs, I still contend that both City and Spurs, I think they're going to have they will have some struggles in the last couple of weeks of the season, but massive credit to Tottenham. Like, considering all the Pochettino to Man United stuff that, you know, everyone's forgotten about that all of a sudden. You know, like, it was nailed on, he's leaving Spurs, they've got all this turmoil, what's going to happen at the end of the season? You know, there's still the pressure on them to deliver silverware, etc. More from outside the club, I think, than inside. And then Harry Kane got a big injury and everyone went, yeah, well, that's Spurs, fuck, because they're a one-man team. And they've been playing Fernando Llorente up front, who is... basically a statue with some points of articulation.
I mean, I don't think they've been playing him up front in the Premier League, have they?
I mean
he scored that oggy in the cup competition, didn't he?
He was playing at the weekend, so, you know, I mean, whether they were using him off the bench,
So, the only player I noticed up front was Son,
yeah,
to be honest with you. He's the guy that makes them tick right now, him and Eriksen. If those two go, you're going to struggle. But I think Kane's adapted his game to play with Son a little bit more, mm-hmm, this season and stuff, so it's not just solely on Kane's shoulders and stuff. And they're a good side. They've got good players all over the pitch. They've got, mm-hmm, good defenders. They've got three or four really good centre-halves. You know, the left-back's really good. They've got good... Eriksen's one of the most creative players.
They've got two good full-backs on either side, haven't you? They've got three or four good centre-halves. The keeper's fine.
That Davinson Sanchez is brilliant, like,
yeah,
absolutely superb as a centre half. And Son for me is, you know, if I could handpick anybody from the Premier League, he'd be up there in the top three picks from any player in the Premier League, to be honest with you. I'd probably pick him over Kane, if I'm honest with you. I rate him that highly. Like.
I think Harry Kane is a builder side around kind of player. His Son's so good that he would fit splendidly into Liverpool.
Listen, you know, I'm not often right on football and stuff, but I said Spurs would be there. I said it from day one this season, and I was looking forward to seeing how they do with no signings. Because just because you're doing something different to everybody else doesn't mean you're wrong. It never has done and it never will do. Now, you can be wrong, but that's not the reason, just because you're doing something different. The fact is, he's put his arms around that squad of players and gone, listen, we weren't quite good enough last season, but I trust each and every one of you. Yeah. And whether that's true, whether they tried to sign players or not, that won't be the message that he'll be telling the lads in the dressing room.
And why would you?
Exactly. Yeah. Because you've got something there. You've got a side who's used to playing with each other, who know each other inside out. You don't have any of the teething problems of trying to get a Fabinho into your side or a Naby Keita into your side. They're just there. They know what they're doing from day one, and that was massively important coming back off the World Cup.
Yeah.
That was the thing that, if anything was going to slow them down, that would be the thing. You know, when we get into this business end of the season, are we going to see it then?
Yeah.
But whether they sign players or not, I'll tell you what, Paul, they'd sign players who go to the World Cup anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're all in the same boat. They're not looking for non-internationals.
Yeah.
You know, they're a good side. They want good players, and the players that they would have signed would have gone to the World Cup anyway. It's just having more of them, you would have been able to rotate a little bit
more. And they're in a similar position to us, in which it's easy to forget. They're a year or two maybe, developmentally, ahead of Liverpool, because they've had Pochettino a bit longer than Klopp. It's been something they were building up towards. That we're ahead, you know, we've had to spend to get ourselves to that position, and they're just not in the position financially to compete in the same way, particularly definitely now with the stadium stuff sorted. But they've got, in similar to Liverpool, they have got a young squad. There's not loads of lads there who are about to melt, that are about to fall apart. They've got experience where they need it. They've got energy where they need it. They've got pace where they need it. And you're right that, and it wouldn't shock, as mentioned elsewhere, I think we mentioned this on the Reds news roundup this week, you know, and it's been mooted by Paul Joyce already. Liverpool aren't going to go mad in the summer because they made the Champions League final last year. We'll know a bit clearer in the next few weeks. If Liverpool can get past Bayern, if they can get to the quarter semis, and we can run the Premier League deep into the last couple of games of the season at worst, then what more is there really? You don't need too much more than that. You might need to freshen things up a little bit, and just some lads might want to move on, and you might need to make changes in that regard. But you're not making wholesale changes. You don't need to go and throw £200 million at the problem anymore, because the problems are largely fixed.
Look at the contract lengths of everybody. You know, they're all on 5-year deals. We've got them here for a few years, and you wouldn't tie them all down if you didn't want to use them all.
Yeah.
You know, for us, next season's about probably adding a little bit of depth to the squad, and I think there's players like Sturridge and Origi that will probably go. We'll need to bring in a couple of players there. I think you'll probably lose Moreno. You'll probably bring a player in there. You'll probably lose a centre half, maybe two. You need to probably bring a couple in there, but it's ins and outs. It's not adding to anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's replacing what your squad players are with better versions of them, and making sure that you keep that fluidity, you keep that side together, and they'll continue to grow. You know, we you mentioned it earlier on the podcast that, you know, like a new signing, Oxlade-Chamberlain will be like a new signing.
Yeah.
You know, Naby Keita is like a new signing right now for us, and you know, next season they'll be fully integrated. Hopefully, if everything's right with Oxlade-Chamberlain, he's back into the side. There's options for us. You know, every single game, you've probably got six midfielders going for three spots.
And it was a really interesting discussion on the Reds News Roundup. There's lads we're going to promote as well this summer, and Rian Brewster's going to come in the summer, and he's going to come in as a new player, but not a player who's not integrated. He's going to come in he's already been a member of the first group squad. He's over in training with them in Marbella now. He's been at Melwood doing his rehabilitation. He's been there the whole time. We are effectively buying a hot young talent this summer to go into our squad, who we bought. It's all bought and paid for. It's all been sorted. And it's not even like bringing Origi in after a year or Keita in after a year. He's there. Everyone knows him. Everyone loves him. All that kind of stuff. Yeah, they're the things that, the intangibles, the things that we often think about. And again, Spurs,
we've got another probably 30 goals coming in from Harry Wilson as well.
Absolutely,
you know what I mean? And just ridiculous. He's probably just going to score corners for us all the time.
Ryan Kent coming back. Not so much. I think we're doing the right things. I think Spurs are very much doing the right things. City pulled Chelsea's pants down. City doing the right things. Chelsea very much not.
Chelsea stuff's mad at the moment, isn't it?
I can't stand that football club, and I don't like this. The tarring at whole fan base with one brush, but largely because I don't mind some Chelsea fans. Rory from CFC Fans TV, he's a good friend of ours, I really like him, but he's got the same attitude. I've seen him going, has he been sacked yet? You know, like, he used some name which I didn't understand, it might have been in joke or whatever, but that attitude, they are conditioned for this attitude of sacking your manager all the time. Sarri's a boss manager, he's a boss fella. Their players are knobheads, and that is that you reap what you sow, and this is it. And they just need to get a new. They need to sack him. They need to get a manager in, and that manager needs to not win the league. And then the next manager needs to not win the league, and the next manager needs to not win the league after that, and maybe they'll get the idea that you need to stop being fucking gobshite and get players who actually want to give their all for your team.
Yeah, listen, you know, I can understand why they think that way, and you know, it's not just Rory. I've seen loads of it on Twitter about this sack Sarri and all this type of shite, and that's fair enough. I understand why they are the way that they are, because it's worked,
yeah.
To be honest with you. And you know, they've seen the that ruthlessness that Abramovich has got, where he just goes, no, next up, no, next up, no, next up. They had a fucking World Cup winner manager in Scolari there, who didn't get an opportunity to do something.
A full season.
No, exactly. You know, and they're surprised. No, do they want to change? Yes, of course, because they've seen them have success. Now, what I think is, it's unsustainable success. And you might say, Chris, you're wrong there, because they've done it for the last 15 years. And I go, yeah, you know what? Fair enough, you've sustained it for amount of time, but now you've run out of top managers. You've literally ran out of top managers. Nobody's wanting to go there. As much as I respect Sarri and his brand of football, has he ever won a fucking trophy? You know, that's not something that Chelsea managers of the last 10 years haven't been brought in on the back of a couple of good seasons with Villas-Boas
came in with the UEFA, with the Europa League, didn't he? You know, you're dead right in that regard. If you're going to do something...
Bringing Ancelotti, one of the most successful managers of all time. Jose Mourinho's just won European Cups with Porto. Hiddink. You know, these guys have all won stuff. Sarri hadn't.
Yeah.
And it's quite
strange.
With
the exception of Roberto Di Matteo, but albeit on a caretaker basis.
Even Rafa Benitez, you know, obviously won stuff with us and stuff. And so it feels to me like this is the end of that Chelsea. And this will be a big, important time for Chelsea, because if they make the wrong decision here, I think the ramifications will be felt for a few years. Now, I personally believe that they should give Sarri time. I think he's been quite stubborn. I don't think he's been quite backed in the way that Chelsea fans would expect him to have been backed, although they did get him Higuain in the January transfer window. They did get him Jorginho. Some of the stuff that he's doing, I think what they are looking for, Chelsea fans, is for him to be a little bit more malleable with the tactics.
Yeah.
I think he's very set in his ways.
Well, I also think fucks him, doesn't it? Because it's such an easy spot.
You have to be set in your ways when you're implementing a system.
Yeah.
You can't. You go into a football club and go, this is the way we play. The first sign of danger. Because they were unbeaten for 20 games odd.
Yeah.
When you know what I mean? Yeah. There was three of us at the top of the league. And you can't just go, fuck, let's play 4-4-2 and lump the ball long.
Yeah.
Because what does that do?
Didn't he, ahead of the Champions League final, he said, are you making any special preparations for Rennes? He said, what am I going to do? Haven't played all season. Am I going to walk in and they on either the biggest game of the club in the club's recent history and say, right lads, we're changing it all because I'm dead scared of this? What message does that send you? Dead right, you've got to stick to your guns to some extent. But the problem is, of course, you've got a lot of like TalkSport's got a lot of like ex-Chelsea. So you've got Jason fucking Cundy and all that, like, you know, having it weighing in his opinion and all this shite. And it's just. From the outside in, when you don't watch a football club week in, week out, and of course, you know, the people who do watch it week in, week out, what the people who want Sarri gone, so that's fine. The Kante thing, everyone knows he's the best six in the league, and he's not playing in that position. So it's too easy for everyone who doesn't really give a fuck or really know too much about Chelsea to jump on the bandwagon and jump on Sarri's back in that regard. But you're right, they're so used to that notion of, They win the league. The next season manager, it falls apart. They sack him. They bring someone else in. They win the league. Then he's shit, and so on. Largely, that I think this was the year they were meant to do it. And the problem is, you're right with Sarri's coming in, Sarri ball and all this. It's like he's walked in. There's an episode of The American Office where it's a Halloween episode, and it's only this thing at the start, and everyone comes in as the Joker from The Dark Knight, and it's like he's come in and gone, oh, I've got these revolutionary tactics, it's a passing, it's a bit of counter pressing, it's doing all this, and he's gone, everyone does that here. Oh God! Right, this is there's nothing particularly special about this, is there? So,
he was winning games at the start of the season, he was telling us in his press conferences, "We're not good enough yet." Yeah. We're, you know, they were unbeaten, and everyone thought he was blagging.
Yeah.
He was clearly could just see that they weren't doing the things that he wanted them to do.
And he said as well, you know, he wasn't doing anything radical because there was no point, because it was going to take time to get it over. You can't come in and to completely fundamentally change the identity of the club.
Can I cast your mind back a couple of years to Guardiola's first full season? And you know, there was rumblings then that Guardiola's style of play will not work in the Premier League during that first season with Manchester
Fraudiola.
City. Fraudiola, yeah. You know what I mean? And let's be honest, they didn't sack him. They stuck with it. He didn't change his principles because he believed in them. And they racked up 100 points last season.
He got better players to better fit what he wanted to do, and he boosted out a load of the ones. The uproar when he got rid of Joe Hart.
Yeah.
Joe Hart, shit, lad. He's fucking shit. He's fine. But no, that's the thing with Sarri, is that...
Will Sarri be able to do that at Chelsea?
You see it all over, though, Chris. And that's why I was so blessed with Jurgen Klopp. And it was why getting someone in who's got that big reputation that you're like, well, there's no one better. So if this guy can't do it, then no one can do it, basically. We might as well all pack up and go home. So there is the degree of that with Sarri. But he... It takes time. He's got to come in and give him a couple of seasons, give him another transfer window, for God's sake. Everton do this. Everton, you know, Marco Silva might be the answer for Everton. He might actually be the perfect fit for them. He might be a great manager. They're not going to give him the time to become their manager,
because that's what they've become.
They all hate Koeman.
Get fifth with them?
They had no interest in hearing me say this, and they never will entertain it now because it's gone, and the narrative's now written in stone. If they gave Koeman a load of money and they didn't have the right transfer policy, but they bought some decent players, but it didn't fit a coherent mould of what they were going to do. But that, because it might take three windows to do that, like you wouldn't judge Jurgen Klopp on his signings for the first two seasons. It's only come together now that he's finally added two or three,
four, five, and six,
yeah, exactly,
to make his team. I think, you know, the Everton one's interesting. Who was the director of football before last?
It was
Brands now, is it?
Yeah. Oh God, Steve Walsh.
So then Walsh comes in, he does something. They sack the manager, they sack him. Brands come in, he tries to fix Walsh's mess. They sack the manager, they bring another manager in. At what point do Everton fans look across the park and go, kind of got to do it their way? It's the only way that we're going to be able to do this.
Nobody wants to hear when you're already miles behind in a race that you've got to stop and take time, rebuild. Like, you know, like you've got to rebuild your car. You want to get by the race. No, you've got to stop, and we've got to pull it all apart, and we've got to start again. It's like, but they're already ahead of us. Well, you know, if you ever want a chance of getting up there, then you've got to go, well, we're not going to catch them for 3 or 4 years, 5 years, but what we're building...
Another 20.
When that starts to dip, we're going to catch them at that point. And then if they turn it around, they could come up, but that's when we're going to go neck and neck with them. But it might take five. But unfortunately, it's where we're at. And we're Liverpool were as close to the brink of us never being able to truly get behind a football club again. Because it's been so long since we've won a league title, and we've had our heart broken too many times. And you can see we've had those moments under Jurgen Klopp where it happened last week, Chris, where collectively people's heads fell off over fucking absolutely nothing, because we are so mentally fragile by all these things. And that Chelsea have got it, but they've got it having been successful with it. Everton are doing it, having been an absolute fucking shambles for 20 years, you know, so much so that they deify David Moyes. I don't want to totally knock the job he did, but he was very good at managing, you know, the expectations, and very good at spinning the narrative of what a great job he did as well.
I thought he did, to be fair.
But it's that whole, did really good with the resources he had, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, fine.
Don't think fine. He would have done better with more resources. Didn't think he was the type of manager.
Yeah. And all these things, and it's all a symptom of the way that modern footy is, and that's why bringing it back to Liverpool.
But then it's how things are, like, talked about in the media and stuff. I saw something the other day, and I don't know whether it's true, but over the last few years, I can't remember the time frame, I'm sorry, but Rafa Benitez has spent as much money as Mauricio Pochettino, like 10 million less or something like that. And you're like, fucking hell, and Rafa's moaning about money and stuff. Well, first of all, the last signing hadn't even played a game when I'd looked at this, and he was their record signing ever. But actually, if you look at it, I think Newcastle it's 12 years maybe now that Ashley's been there, they've averaged like 3 million net spend a season or something like that, do you know what I mean? And it's like, how are you looking at it? How are you viewing this? And, you know, and how are fans viewing it? Because they've been told the whole picture, they're looking it out themselves.
It's why Tompkins Times is an absolute essential for me. Like, you know, I happily pay my subscription fee for that because Paul's an absolute genius. And when he talks about the football price index and you know that, because people do this, people arbitrarily draw lines under things and say, well, look what he spent. Well, there's a massive difference because Rafa Benitez could spend the same amount of money as Guardiola from now. And in 5 years' time, everyone goes, well, Rafa spent the same amount of money as Pep Guardiola. Yeah, but fucking Pep Guardiola
has a squad
of title billion winners. Exactly. And that always gets forgotten. And it happened with the Jurgen Klopp thing. Look at what Jurgen Klopp's done. Look at what Jurgen Klopp had compared to what Man City had. Compared to... We were behind when Jurgen Klopp joined the club. We were behind Man United. Man United were having a bit of a wobble, obviously, in the Moyes thing, but largely... City, United, Chelsea, Arsenal, Spurs, and then throw Leicester in periodically. We were miles behind all of our rivals in that. So we've had to spend to catch up, just to catch up, and we've managed through brilliant management and being intelligent and doing the right things. We're punching above our weight as well. Like, so yeah, there's a load of bullshit football stories and ways of talking about things, and they're just there to serve whatever negative purpose they're looking to serve on the day. And that's why I think the beauty of, you know, it's good to get your news about your football club from your own club biased media, as far as I'm concerned. Like, because you might as well. Because no one from outside is going to tell you anything that's going to make you feel better. No one gives a fuck about
you. But what happens? What happens when your club biased media are wrong? And listen, we can be wrong. And you know, I think CFC fans channel or whatever they're called are wrong in this instance. You know, as much as I respect Rory, as much as I like Rory,
I think.
But then, you know, are we not just a reflection of our fan bases a lot of the time anyway?
Yeah, I think that's good. I think there's good examples of it and bad examples of it, and it's how you choose to do it, of course, because would we say Arsenal Fan TV is a fair reflection of Arsenal fans? Across the board, probably yes, because there's loads more people that get interviewed on that than actually people that even give a fuck about. But people judge it from one end. I think provided you're largely level-headed and you love the club, I think that's the attitude. For if you've got a willingness to find to look at it from all angles, that's the difference. And when I say club buys, I don't mean blinkered. I mean people who actually give a fuck about all aspects of the football club is the way to do it, because there is no agenda there. There is no narrative to try and make something fit. It's like, we look, when it's shit, we go, well, it's shit. You can see it's shit, and when it's good, you can see it's good. But like, I don't know. Maybe it's just because Scousers are just the best human beings.
I think that's probably. I think we've just solved the world.
Swifty, just that. A team of Robertsons or a team of Carragers?
Robertsons.
I agree. And sorry, Jamie, he doesn't watch this. But we like Jamie Carragher. I think a team of both would brutalise so many opponents.
I just think Robertson for the attacking side of things. I don't think I remember Jamie being very good going forwards.
Well, he's. Started life, didn't he? Bless him.
As a striker.
No, I'm right here and right now. I see Robertson. The energy that man possesses. It would be so enjoyable. It would be a joy. They'd probably get battered everywhere because he can't score to save his fucking life. Bless him, can he? But then again, not like Carragher was particularly prolific in opposition nets. So yeah, no, I would go with the Robbo thing. Matthew Feeks. Pick two ex-players to bare-knuckle fight each other, and who would win? Hint, it can be two bellends like Diouf versus Markovic. You might almost have won his own question there.
He has not. Mine is so much better.
Go for it.
Jan Koller versus Pep Guardiola.
Oh, wow. Just so Pep gets his absolute
head kicked in. Absolute head kicked in. Liverpool roll to the Premier League title for the next 5 years. Thank you very much. Jan Koller's like, he's like 2 metres tall or something. He's ridiculous. Absolutely massive. Looks like he was born in a fight. Never mind in a woman.
Yeah.
And then just pounding the shit out of Pep Guardiola, who can't do anything.
His mother was in a scrap when he was birth. And he got out and landed on his 2 feet and just started throwing that massive noggin onto people left, right and centre.
Pep ain't got a chance.
I went into Liverpool for this and I went... Martin Skrtel versus Sotiris Kyriakos.
Who do you think would win that? I mean,
I
Kyriakos?
Have no idea, honestly, because I both at the peak of their fitness, so probably not Kyriakos, Liverpool's Kyriakos, maybe a couple of years younger, just to give him a bit more of an advantage. But just for the pure spectacle of it, I think they both die, if I'm honest. I just think it would be...
Like, let's say they're in wrestling costumes. What type of costume do you think they'd wear?
Andre the Giant style.
Both of
baby
them.
Thing. Yeah. Maybe something.
I can't imagine Skrtel wearing that.
No, I think, they're both just the undies, aren't they?
You think?
I
mean?
I don't
with
think
the big
they're boots. Too big. They're too big. You can't be like a heavyweight and wear the long kecks. You've got to go for the ballies, haven't you? Like, so I think they probably would do that. Like, and they would just be brutal.
Finishes?
It would just be punches, Chris. It would just be slobber knocker punches. They wouldn't have special moves.
I feel like Skrtel would like the clothesline from hell.
Yeah, I think they both whatever the bit, a big physical the haymaker.
Is Kyriakos one of those ones with the wet, sweaty air?
They bite and all kinds. Like, and I think there's
any eye patches
afterwards. To each, but that's what I think they would be the kind of lads who would have flesh under the fingernails by the end of it, and it would be gouged, and it would be painful and uncomfortable to watch because you just watch two men dying in front of your very eyes, and it would be so.
Why did you want to pick these two to die?
Because I just thought, I like the expression irresistible force versus the immovable object. That just them smashing it.
Skrtel.
And I've got no great feeling about either of them, to be perfectly honest. Like, you're genuinely.
Too big a loss.
Too big brutal footballers to play for Liverpool that wouldn't
brutal,
be a great loss.
Skrtel, I'm not seeing it.
We used to say 8 nails. That was all Skrtel was.
We also didn't believe it for a second.
All Skrtel was running around and fucking kicking people, like, just slightly. He had no finesse. He just used to head the ball and slidey people, and that was literally Martin Skrtel's career in a nutshell. He thought he was more than that. He very much was. Brendan Rodgers dared to think he was more than that. Brendan, wrong. The death of Superman storyline. And it's Superman versus Doomsday, and they have a fight across the country.
I've read it.
Yeah, they have a fight across the country, and they just beat each other to death. And it ends on one punch where they both just throw it all into one last punch, and they kill each other. And that's what would happen with Martin Skrtel and Sotiris Kyriakos. So that is that. Thank you very much for your questions. We've got loads more coming up on the bonus Q&A for the subscribers on the website, including the thought of, why don't adults get to lead the teams out instead of kids? If we had to support a second team from each of the other top five leagues, who would we choose? We have to play one player for 45 minutes plus every single game until the end of the season, from Mignolet, Moreno, Hoover, Woodburn or Origi. There's a load of new football rules. Which three Liverpool players we would choose to rob a bank? We're going to talk about the Rodri Giggs, Paddy Power advert, and a whole host more as well. So get over to theredmentv.com, sign up for that for more of this. It's always a good laugh. And this will be the 28th of that, so there's a whole back catalogue of them if you want to go back to them, see if your questions ever made it in the past. Other than that, thank you very much, Chris. Thank you very much, Tom. Dynamite work now that we're out of the maze. Just once again, just to clarify, one crystal, no crystals. Thanks for watching.
Did we play killer as well afterwards with that, like, full
either.
Nine?
Didn't win killer.
We've played four games at killer, and the self-crowned RMTV world champion at pool didn't win any of the killer either.
Nope.
I think I won two of the four.
Yeah, unlucky. Tom, loser.
No, Tom, no right to reply. It's loser. Much better that way.
Tom, loser. In fact, if all, anyone who still listens to this podcast can tweet Black Tea Tom and just say,
loser.
Fucking loser. That'd be amazing. Right, see you all on the bonus Q&A. Walk on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.